Tournay, Ironside Academy, Book 2. Written by Jane Washington. Narrated by Jennifer Sterling. Chapter 1. The Secret. Isabel sat cross-legged on Killian's bed, watching him. He seemed too tired to push back the pale golden hair that had fallen in the way of his light yellow-green stare. His usually proud and graceful posture was slumped, his eyes shadowed, the smooth skin beneath bruised and marred by puffiness. He had spent 3 days looking after her while she had been unconscious, but that seemed to be at the expense of himself. Her hair was smooth and shiny, waving in soft little ripples of strawberry blonde over her shoulders. His was messy, the pale strands drifting fretfully around his strained expression. Almost dying and then waking up with pupils a completely different color and the word mate being thrown around should have limited her capacity to care about anyone else. But her concern for Killian spiked anyway, especially when he started to pace, his jaw clenched like he was struggling to speak. "There's something else you need to know," he had said, before he started with the pacing and the furtive glances at the door. She remained where she was, occasionally dropping her gaze to stare at her knees. She didn't bother trying to dress herself properly. She had already known that Killian didn't like her in that way, but when he kissed her, seemingly to reassure himself that she definitely wasn't his mate, it really made the fact painfully apparent. It was confusing for her mind and body to be kissed by someone who looked like Killian, who smelled like Killian, who was as kind and caring and touchy as Killian, only to have him declare that it meant nothing. It was confusing because she had already known it would mean nothing to him. So why had she enjoyed it? "It can't be me, you understand?" he had insisted. "It's about Theo." The words he had been troubling over finally spilled out of him as he spun to face her again. He looked a little wild. His hands shook as he rubbed his arms, his posture fidgety, like he didn't know what to do with his limbs. "What about Theo?" Her entire body locked up, frozen, bracing for bad news. "You said he was okay." She tried not to sound accusatory, but her tone carried a hint of sharpness. "He's fine," Killian assured her, coming to sit on the bed beside her. He placed a pale hand against her leg, his thumb brushing along her knee, his other fingers lightly grazing her thigh. "Look, nobody else is going to tell you this, and I probably shouldn't either, but he likes you. Maybe he doesn't even realize it himself, but we've all noticed."
"You can't say you know him better than he knows himself."
She pulled her shoulders back a little, dropping her attention to her folded legs, and to the hand against her thigh, to the thumb brushing back and forth over her knee.
"It's just, if you're about to tell me to stop hanging out with Theo..."
"I'm not,"
he interrupted, biting down on his pillowy lower lip. He released it on a deep breath.
"I'm trying to warn you. You need to be better prepared when he loses it next time. He's going to be even more volatile than usual because he likes you and your eyes have changed. You need to keep that in mind and keep yourself safe. And under no circumstances can you use your ability on him again. The next time you die, it will be permanent."
"Killian," she raised her head, fixing him with a look, "are you trying to be my friend?"
"I thought I already was."
His brows drew together, but his eyes were too guarded for her to figure out how he felt about her question.
"Then stop trying to be my dad. I already have one of those, and he's more than enough."
She slid off the bed again, searching the room until she caught sight of the clothes she had been wearing before she passed out several days ago. They were folded neatly on a side table by the door.
Thanks for washing my clothes and brushing my hair and feeding me soup and taking care of me, though.
She had to rush those words out without a pause, her face flaming as she quickly scooped up the clothes and escaped into his bathroom, his light chuckle chasing her. She got dressed as fast as she could, needing to pause a few times as her head spun and her body grew so weak she thought she might pitch sideways into the tiled floor.
"I'll get you some food," Killian called through the door. "You don't need to come out until you're ready."
She heard the door to his room open and close before she could even thank him, and she leaned over the sink, sucking in a long, shaky breath before she raised her head. Those eyes were not hers. And yet, that little piece of her was still there. Gold flecks. Little starbursts in the strange galaxy of color her eyes had become. Most of the tones were dark, a splotchy background bleeding into her onyx sigma ring. But some of them were lighter, twinkling blips and specks that shifted when she turned her head, like her eyes hadn't even settled yet. Like they were still shifting, evolving, searching. Did that mean she hadn't met her mate yet? Or that they didn't exist? Would it be a boy or a girl? Killian's fear had become infectious, and she stood there weakly, wondering how awful he must have felt, waiting for her to wake up and wondering if it could possibly be him. Maybe a girl would have been better for her. She didn't want a mate. They could be best friends, like her mother used to be. Or maybe it didn't work like that. The alphas on the rooftop must not have been able to see her eyes clearly. They had probably all been waiting, wondering if it was one of them, even though Killian had said their eyes didn't match hers. But they would find out now. Killian would reassure them. She didn't really need to be there. She didn't really need to face everyone after the mess she had caused. She didn't need to explain to Ashford why she was hearing strange voices in her head. She didn't need to talk to Theodore after his eyes had bled black and chaos had descended. She didn't need to check if he was okay, and she didn't need to reassure him that she was okay. What she needed was to get better at lying to herself. Ugh! She pushed away from the mirror and tiptoed through Killian's room, opening the large panes over his window seat. She got sight of her phone charging on his bedside table and quickly stuffed it into her pocket before sticking a leg out of the window and feeling for the ground. She closed the window behind her, straightening out her shirt before hurrying around the lake toward the steps leading down Alpha Hill. The pain in her chest was growing worse, and she paused halfway down, her hands on her knees, her breath wheezing as darkness swam over her vision.
"Going somewhere?"
a rough voice asked a few feet behind her. She snapped up straight, glancing over her shoulder. Oscar Sato was the last person she wanted to run into while running away from the other alphas. Or had she run into him? It looked like he had followed her. He was wearing an oversized shirt and long pants, his comfortable style somehow managing to look fashionable. His arms were folded, the dusky skin rippling as his muscles shifted. She couldn't see his hands, but he was probably forming fists. His deep-set eyes were shadowed, his black lashes almost kissing his cheeks as he stared down his nose at her. Sato wasn't handsome like Theodore and Ashford, and he sure as hell wasn't beautiful like Killian, but the Ironside forums didn't gossip about how ugly he was either. Not like they did with Mikkel Easton. Sato was like a magnet, sometimes drawing people in and sometimes repelling them away. Most people couldn't decide if they were obsessed with being scared of him or just plain scared of him. There was a terrifying pull in the way he made eye contact, his deep stare unblinking. He drew attention and didn't let it stray. and he currently had all the little hairs along Isabel's arm rising in alarm.
"Do you have a problem with that?" she asked carefully. "Just apologize, idiot."
With everyone else, her Sigma nature always rose to the surface. But with Sato, it seemed to be stuck behind a rock that wouldn't budge. The words she needed to say lodged in her throat, threatening to choke her before they allowed her to voice them.
"Just what were you going to do, exactly?"
He cocked his head to the side, an eagle observing a worm.
"Stroll into a dorm full of people who would do anything to sabotage you? With rainbow eyes?"
He started walking toward her, stepping down until he was right in front of her, towering over her, and then he bent, sticking his face a few inches from hers. He looked between her eyes, pulled in a short breath, and shook his head, easing back a little.
"Seriously, Rabbit?"
"Don't call me that."
She shakily felt behind her with her foot, moving down a step without breaking eye contact.
"I just needed a minute. I would have come back to apologize."
"We don't want your apologies."
"You don't?"
She scrunched up her face, trying to read his impassive expression.
"Of course we fucking do,"
he growled.
"You almost died in our dorm. You think the officials love alphas so much that there wouldn't be any consequences to a body turning up on our rooftop?"
"It wasn't deliberate."
She reclaimed the step, quickly crossing her arms to control her trembling.
"I was only trying to help Theo. I didn't mean to, with Moses."
She tossed her hands up, feeling hot temper suddenly flare in her eyes.
"It was an accident. I don't need to explain my ability to you. You think either of them explained their
He was on her in an instant, one hand wrapping over her mouth, the other catching the back of her head, his grip tightening hard enough that she felt a flash of panic, her hands immediately gripping his wrists, her nails digging in.
"I told you not to say that word,"
he said lowly, breathing the warning right against the back of his hand. Ferality. The illegal ability. The forbidden word. The reason everything had happened in the first place. She dug her nails in further, pulling at his wrists. He breathed in deeply, almost like he was savoring the pain before he released her. But he didn't move away. He fixed her hair, twisting a flyaway strawberry gold strand around his finger before tucking it behind her ear.
"I won't go out of my way to hurt you,"
he muttered, gold-ringed black eyes drifting over her face.
"Why would you say that?"
she rasped. He blinked, focusing on her eyes again.
"I was talking to myself."
"Yikes. Are you actually stopping me from leaving?"
"Yes."
His hand drifted over hers, the tips of his fingers grazing against the softness of her skin. The touch was surprisingly gentle, but purposeful, reminding her of the careful way he had tucked her hair behind her ear. It was a lie, a manipulation, just like his scent, a cloying, poisonous nectar meant to draw her in until she was fully under his control and he could do what he wanted with her. And with Sato, that could be anything.
"Are you seriously asking me to apologize for an ability I can't control?"
she bit out, unable to pull her hand away for some reason. His touch grew more insistent, his fingers twisting between hers. They were much bigger than hers, and the stretch actually hurt a little. But he didn't leave their hands hanging together loosely to ease the discomfort. He pulled her palm against his, tightly, locking his hold on her.
"Yes,"
he muttered.
"Even though it was two of your alphas who started all of this?"
she asked.
"With abilities they can't control."
Sato's lips lifted, his canines catching against his bottom lip as he tried to bite back what looked like dark amusement, possibly at her expense.
Don't you mean one of your alphas started all this? She tried to tear her hand away, but he only gripped her harder. A strange sensation shot up her arm, like pins and needles.
Carter, you're awake.
The voice sounded behind her, where Sato's inky stare had lifted, fixing to the speaker. Great. She closed her eyes, steadying herself, and then she turned, as much as Sato's unbreakable grip on her hand allowed. Professor Easton. She didn't know what else to say.
Were you going somewhere?
He frowned at her, moving closer until he was on her eye level, still several steps away. His attention switched between her eyes the same way Killian and Sato's had, but it was a brief, cursory glance, simply categorizing the odd color of her irises.
I was, she finished, lamely.
Would you come back for a brief moment?
He sounded so polite, so friendly, so reasonable. But there was an undercurrent of authority there, subtly letting her know that she didn't really have a choice.
We should discuss the events on the rooftop.
He sounded so opposite to the emotion emanating off him, battering against her chest. There were too many negative feelings vying for dominance. It was hard to tell exactly what they were, but it was pretty clear he was very unhappy to see her. His face lied, but his emotions didn't. His sharp, scarred features were arranged perfectly, allowing no emotion to shine through. His dark blue, slightly mismatched eyes with the differently shaped black splotches in them were hard to focus on, so she directed her attention to his polished shoes.
Sure, she said a little too quietly. I'll be right there.
Oscar will accompany you,
Easton added, forcing her head to jerk immediately back up. He wasn't looking at Sato, his expression sharpening for just a moment as he stared at her, a shrewdness peeking through before he fixed the crack in his mask, smoothing it out again.
You must still be feeling very weak. We wouldn't want anything to happen to you.
Sato made no move to follow Easton, who passed them both with the barest brush of a sleeve. Once the professor was out of earshot, Sato softened his grip on her hand and then released her, flexing his fingers before stuffing them into his pocket.
Come on,
he muttered, already looking back toward the dorm.
Let's get this over with.
She followed silently, grateful he didn't seem to be in a rush, because after a few steps, she was already out of breath and fighting off dizziness again. He walked slowly and calmly, somehow knowing how much she was struggling without once turning around.
As soon as they figured out Isabel had slipped out of Killian's window, Theodore's throat had tightened with panic. He had been trying to run after her when Mikkel intercepted, walking toward the dorm from the hill where he must have passed Isabel at some point. He pushed Theodore back through the door.
She's coming, he said, pointing to the common room. Go and wait for her in there.
Theodore nodded stiffly, shoving down his restless, panicky energy as he strode back to the common room and planted himself in front of the window. Waking up after going feral was always hard. Aside from the wounds and the guilt, there was usually a maelstrom of fear in his gut, swirling around with indecision, wondering at the damage he had caused. He could never remember much. Sometimes he was left to wonder about the people he might have hurt and the impossible position he might have put his friends in. This time had been different. 2 days ago, he woke up with a single thought blaring like a siren in the forefront of his brain. It's like she's already dead. Isabel is dead. Except she wasn't dead. She was his tether, drifting somewhere on the other end of a half-formed mate bond. It was easy to believe, though he kept that to himself. It was easy to believe she was his,
that he really was responsible for her, that it really was his job to protect her, that she was made to fit tucked beneath his arm, hugged into his side as he tempted one of those unwilling smiles to her lush lips. He had felt responsible for her from the moment he met her, and had chalked it up to feeling indebted to her. She had saved him in his most vulnerable moment, and hadn't asked for a single thing in return, except to be friends. Not that she knew Killian had taken a photo of the note she never gave him. He had never dreamed he would have a mate. He definitely didn't deserve one. But as soon as Isabel whispered to him in the pool that she hated alphas, he could suddenly picture it. The little Sigma was exactly what his mate would look like. Anything less would be a disappointment. It would have to be a she, and she would have to have sunlit silk for hair, the waves dwarfing her small face. She would have to have skin so pale it was ethereal, like the petals of a white rose with a slight translucency that let him see a hint of her veins. She would have to have eyes lit by a constant wariness, sparking behind the honeyed color of her iris, a jumpiness that didn't match the blessed life of a spoiled rich girl. But he might have been able to trade all of that in, just as long as she had lips like a perfect bow, a subtle plumpness and a velvety-looking texture that made them look like they were crafted to be kissed. Because he really fucking liked staring at her mouth. He liked the shock of the words she uttered, sometimes sharp, sometimes soft, always perfect. He should have known it from the first time she parted those lips and spoke to him. Are you okay? Because that's what you say to a monster. Fucking hell. Stop it. He shook his head, trying to dislodge the thoughts as she appeared at the top of the stairs on the other side of the lake, trailing slowly behind Oscar. Theodore was completely fucking delusional. The mate bond made sense to him, but that was still a far cry from accepting it. There was no way in hell he was sharing his mate. He'd rather go without one, even if it was her. And then there was the other problem. There was the game. Stop glaring at them. Killian nudged his arm. You'll freak her out. You're also the person she's close to in here, Elijah added, walking into the room with a notebook tucked under his arm. It had been attached to his side since Theodore had woken up, and Elijah was constantly researching everything he could find about mate bonds and adding notes to it. Gabriel was close behind, looking disgruntled. Mikkel was obviously summoning everybody. We need her to not feel threatened or scared, Elijah continued, or she might run off and start blabbing things she shouldn't to people who don't need to know. Or maybe we don't want to be bringing a Sigma into a room full of tense alphas just to scare the shit out of her, Killian added, giving Elijah an exasperated look. Or that. Elijah shrugged. Whatever you need to tell yourself. Where's Moses? He directed that to Theodore, who frowned. He won't be joining, Theodore predicted. He said he didn't want anything to do with this. So did Oscar, Gabriel noted calmly, nodding toward the glass wall. But look who ran after her. Just count your lucky stars he didn't push her down the stairs. Kian noted, striding in from the hallway as Kaelin entered from the office closest to the front door. Mickey probably interrupted his plans, Gabriel pointed out. Nico not joining? Kaelin asked as Mikkel returned, his scarred lips twisted into a heavy frown. No, Mikkel answered, the word full of exasperation and anger. Moses and Nico have decided it would be best if they removed themselves from the situation. Because you can just remove a mate. Theodore snapped his lips shut as the door to the dorm opened, and they all turned to watch as Oscar led Isabel into the common room. She stood there at the edge of the hallway,
staring at her shoes, tucking trembling arms against her sides. His throat burned again, and he could feel eyes on him. They were monitoring him, just as much as they were monitoring her, and that pissed him off. Plastering an easy smile on his face, he strode forward, watching some of the tension ease from her stiff shoulders as she lifted her head to watch his approach.
"Welcome back to the world of the living, Sleeping Beauty."
He tucked her under his arm, feeling her little hand flutter against his stomach as he hugged her sideways, like she didn't know whether to embrace him in return or not.
"How are you feeling?"
He ruffled her hair, mostly to tease out Killian's scent. The dickhead liked to saturate her just to fuck with him. But Killian wouldn't do that today, not with everyone's emotions stretched so thin. Which meant he had been all over her for a different reason. Theodore tried not to think about it as he rubbed his hand along her arm, trying to coax a smile out of her, almost biting his tongue when it appeared, shaky and hesitant.
"I feel fine," she whispered, her fascinating eyes searching his face. They were still soft, still gentle, still wide and doe-like, but now they were filled with confusing color. He focused on the familiar gold specks.
"Were you really going to run away without checking on me?"
he teased, slowly walking her over to the couch. She only looked at him, nobody else, as she allowed him to lead her. He dropped onto her left side and tucked her beneath his arm once she was seated. It wasn't a mate bond thing, the need to wipe away the sense of his friends on her skin. He did it even before the bond happened. He tried to hold himself back from scenting her in front of everyone else, forcing himself to relax back into the couch. But his fingers slipped up along her shoulder to play with her hair again. Fuck. He couldn't stop. She was his friend first. He saw her first. She should smell like him, not them. Ugh, he should think about something else.
"Obviously something happened on the rooftop," he said. "Your eyes changed."
"But none of yours did," she quickly added, like she needed that acknowledged, out loud.
Something they couldn't do. "None of our eyes match yours, as you can see."
Kaelin avoided answering her in her own words. His mouth kept pinching down at the sides like he hated talking about mate bonds at all, in any context, with a student. "And there was nobody else there?" she pressed, lifting her chin to meet Kaelin's uncomfortable stare. Behind him, Oscar hesitated, seemingly torn between the hallway and the common room. He accidentally met Theodore's eyes, and Theodore cocked a brow in challenge.
"Are you going to stay or leave?"
Oscar scowled, twitched, stayed. He was staying. Theodore's other brow jumped up, his eyes widening momentarily, but then, all of a sudden, Oscar let out a small growl and turned, striding off.
"Not that we know of,"
Kaelin answered.
"I'm just going to come out and say it. I think you should keep what happened to yourself, Carter."
Isabel tapped her fingers together in her lap distractedly. She didn't understand why almost all of them had to be there for the discussion they were having, but she was too tired to question it. They were probably just protecting each other. "Obviously, it would be better if nobody had to know what happened." She sighed out the words, exhaustion dropping her shoulders even though she had only just woken up. "But how am I supposed to lie about this?" She pointed at her eyes.
"You could wear contacts,"
Reed suggested. He was sitting on one of the couches set a few feet back from the window, the afternoon sun straining to reach him, barely managing to touch the sweep of silvery blonde hair that brushed his forehead, or the delicate, aristocratic features that somehow made him handsome instead of feminine. It was probably the frosty, hard look in his eyes and the tense squareness of his jaw. "All the time?" Isabel frowned at him. "While I'm sleeping? While I'm showering? While I'm dancing and swimming? I live in Dorm O. There are cameras and people everywhere. It isn't like here. Her words trailed off on a stutter as she sought out the cameras carefully disguised around the common room.
The cameras have been malfunctioning since the storm.
It was Kaelin West who answered her again. The large, intimidating professor didn't even try to put on a friendly face like the other scarred alpha professor, even if Easton's smiles were fake.
That's why this discussion needed to happen today, before the cameras are fixed.
Oh. She went back to playing with her fingers, pulling in a deep breath. It wasn't until her lungs were filled to the brim with a rich, earthy, resinous aroma that she realized she was trying to pull Theodore's amber scent into her body. Theodore was staying quiet, holding her loosely against his side, his body relaxing languidly into the couch. It was like he didn't have a care in the world. He definitely wasn't acting crazy or jealous like Kaelin had hinted he might. They were so wrong about him. Still, she was grateful for the support. There was something infinitely comforting about Theodore, even if he did make her nervous sometimes. He was so charismatic that it felt like he could turn the tide of a crowd with a single look or a single word. Watching the nuances of his tight facial muscles working felt like watching someone solve an incredibly satisfying, incredibly complex puzzle. He was just Theodore. Powerful and dangerous, with a smile that had the whole world fooled. All of those qualities that made her fear ever disappointing him or being on his bad side were the same qualities that had her stomach twisting whenever he positioned himself as her ally, her friend. Like he was doing now, tucking her into his side so she wouldn't feel ambushed by the other alphas.
"What do you think?"
West prompted. His voice was deep and a little raspy. It was like he was trying to make himself sound soft and approachable. But it didn't really land. It wasn't natural for him. Shit. She had been silent for too long. She peeked up at the huge man. How bad was the storm? Kaelin said it was too dangerous to get me to the hospital. How long have the cameras been out?
The cameras didn't see anything.
Theodore spoke up before West could answer.
And the storm was bad enough to completely destroy the rooftop. They're starting renovations tomorrow. It also tore up the mountain behind the dorm.
There's a fire trail up the mountain. I saw it in the Creating Ironside documentary. Isabel chewed the inside of her cheek as her sluggish thoughts tried to formulate a plan. I could say I was hiking up there when the storm hit, and I just woke up today. That nobody was around me. There aren't any cameras at the front of the dorm, so even if the last footage they have of me is walking to the front of the dorm, there would be no footage of me leaving again and walking straight to the track.
That was the seventh scenario I brainstormed,
Reed said, crossing his arms and looking impressed. What the heck were the others?
Could work,
West agreed after a moment.
It would take the attention off us and keep you safe. If they don't know who your mate is, they have less of a reason to pull you from Ironside. They might just keep you on screen, waiting for the drama to play out, even if your eyes haven't changed in a normal way.
She had briefly wondered what it meant that both her eyes had changed instead of one of them, but clearly West had considered it much further. He had thought about the real-world consequences, the dangers of being an unknown to the officials. Suddenly, the contacts seemed like a good idea.
Or you could wear one contact.
Spade spoke up, his russet gaze narrowing on her face, like he had sensed the sudden change in her thoughts.
Then the officials won't be alarmed at all, only curious, and probably overjoyed since you've become a trending topic on the show.
It'll give you those popularity points you need to get a room in this dorm,
Theodore added casually. She froze, barely daring to look around at the other faces in the room, but none of them appeared shocked at the knowledge that she was trying to get a room in Dorm A. Ashford was frowning, staring off toward the hallway, while Reed and Spade seemed distracted and fidgety, ready for the meeting to be over so that they could go about their days. Of course, this didn't really have anything to do with them. She understood why Kaelin and Theodore were there.
they were her friends. Maybe the others were just being nosy.
Reed and Spade definitely seemed the kind to prefer to be in control of most situations.
Killian was looking up at her through pale eyelashes, but he dropped his eyes as soon as she turned to him.
West was frowning like it was his standard expression, and Easton was actually scrolling through his phone like he wasn't even paying attention to their discussion in the first place.
"Okay," she began, but Spade stood suddenly, shocking her. He strolled over, picking up a paper bag that had been sitting beside the couch. He held out the bag to her.
"I already got you some," he said plainly. "You probably already know, since you lived in the human world, but they're obsessed with our eyes. There's an app where you can design your own contacts with your choice of rank ring around the pupil. They offer next business day shipping."
"Oh, wow. That's prepared." She took the bag, peeking inside as though the right words to say in that situation might conveniently be sitting on top of the box of contacts. Spade knew the exact shade and pattern of her eyes. Somehow that didn't surprise her as much as it would have with anyone else. It was just so... Spade. He seemed very intelligent, precise, and exacting. And that was just the surface of his personality. Thankfully, he wasn't the type of person to linger. He gave her a nod and left the room, Reed following without looking at her. Ashford stopped frowning down at the ground, but he seemed to hesitate before leaving, meeting her gaze before he stood. Something unspoken passed between them. It wasn't quite an acknowledgement that they needed to talk, but more of a demand, issued from him to her. She quickly dipped her head, staring into the bag.
"Carter."
West's deep voice had her head snapping up again.
"We're here for you."
He was doing that thing where he tried to make himself sound unthreatening again. And failing, of course. If he had been speaking a different language, she would have easily believed subtitles revealing that he was there to arrest her, and she should probably contact a lawyer.
"If anyone gives you a hard time or you run into any trouble, I want you to come straight to me. Can you do that?"
"Yes," she lied, glancing over to Killian for a moment. His lips twitched.
"You can come to any of us,"
Easton amended, catching the look on her face. Thank you. She tried to look at him, but couldn't hold his mismatched eyes for very long. There was something about Mikkel Easton, something she couldn't put her finger on, but it wasn't right. He wasn't right. And she had absolutely no evidence to back up that theory.
"Good."
He slid his phone back into his pocket, shared a loaded look with West, and left the common room.
"You should head up to the hiking path,"
West advised, checking his watch.
"They'll be sending technicians to fix the cameras soon."
Isabel nodded numbly, waiting until everyone except Theodore had left the room before the breath she had been holding finally stuttered out of her chest.
"It didn't seem this complicated when I woke up," she whispered to her knees.
"You haven't been awake long, Illy."
Theodore's arm fell from her shoulders, his body twisting to face her.
"You were probably in shock, and you still haven't had much of a chance to absorb everything."
"Am I doing the right thing?"
She lifted her eyes to his.
"I've never lied to the officials before. My father would kill me."
Possibly literally, but he didn't need to know that part. He stiffened slightly, his attention drifting over her face, landing on her mouth for a moment.
"You grew up in the human world."
He paused, choosing his words carefully.
"It's different in here, in the settlements. You had choices out there. Now you don't. Now you play by their rules. And the first rule of their game is that there are heroes, there are villains, and there are supporting characters who can only ever become a hero or a villain. Villains can be vanquished, and everyone will still cheer for Ironside. Never give them a reason to cast you as the villain."
"And this anomaly?"
She gestured to her eyes.
"It makes me a villain?"
"It gives them an opening to twist the story however they like."
His big hand landed on her knee, his grip squeezing slightly. Some of the calm, relaxed energy he had been putting off slipped away.
You don't want them filling in the blanks when you present them with a mystery. Decide the story before they do, and make sure it's the only version they see.
Chapter 2. Blood. She climbed up the fire trail slowly, listening out for other people. She had one contact covering the strange color of her left iris, but her clothes were freshly washed and her shoes were clean. In her current state, nobody would believe that she had been stuck out there for days.
One hell of a storm, she muttered, picking over torn-up shrubbery as twigs crunched beneath her soles.
She eventually stopped and plopped herself onto a rock, pausing a moment to sit there and stare out over the chaos of the torn-apart hillside around her. A drone whirred above, and she quickly shifted from the rock to the ground, sighing out an annoyed sound before shoving her hands into the dirt by her sneakers and beginning to streak it over her skin and clothes. She worked fast, aware of the drone drawing nearer, and messed up her hair before starting back down the hill toward Dorm A. She didn't need to fake her unsteady walk, or the way she needed to pause every few steps to brace herself against a tree to catch her breath. She was sick. She had almost died. The drone locked onto her at some point and followed her the rest of the way down. She expected it to lose interest in her as she passed Dorm A, but it stuck with her all the way to the medical center. If it was possible that she might have made it without anyone paying her any attention, the drone put a stop to that. The students immediately picked up their heads at the sound, trying to figure out who it was following. They stared at her, but none of them offered to help. Not even for the views. She pushed into the lobby of the medical center, rubbing at the pain in her chest as she stopped before the triage desk. The woman behind the perspex barrier glanced up from her computer and locked eyes on Isabel before freezing, her fingers falling off the keyboard. She switched her attention between one eye and the other.
"Are you here to report an incident?" she asked, clearly struck by shock.
"Yeah, hi." Isabel scratched her arm awkwardly, where it looked like a hive was forming. Maybe she was allergic to something she had rubbed on herself.
"I was, hiking. Haven't had one of these in a while."
The woman wasn't even listening to her. She surged to her feet and grabbed the desk phone, coming around the other side of the barrier to get a closer look at Isabel's face as she spoke rapidly into the mouthpiece.
"Send down a crew and a bond specialist. Where's your mate?"
She barely paused between words, so it took Isabel a moment to realize the last question had been aimed at her.
"I don't know."
"What?"
The woman pulled the phone away from her ear, frowning.
"Did you have an accident? Did you enter the death phase?"
"Well, yes, I think so."
"You think so?"
This wasn't going well. She was tired and her head was pounding. Her skin was itchy and she just wanted to sink into the corner of a shower and cry, because everything was moving too fast. Everything had changed. Her future was now set in stone. She had a mate. Just like her mother.
"It's the Sigma."
The woman was talking into the phone again, walking away from Isabel.
"She seems very confused. She's probably the tether. She doesn't seem to remember anything, and she looks like she's been in an accident. Are you wounded, Sigma?"
She looked back at Isabel. Isabel shook her head, rubbing her chest.
"Inform her parents,"
the woman said, before hanging up the phone and sliding it back onto the bench.
"Why do you keep rubbing your chest?"
She frowned at Isabel's hand.
"Are you sure you aren't injured?"
"Yes."
Isabel dropped her hand.
"I get sick sometimes. I had to go to hospital a lot when I was a kid. My heart stopped. It's happened before."
"Who was with you?" "I'm Mrs. Gomez, by the way. This is very exciting. If it's true."
"If it's true?" Isabel was led through the office and into a small sick bay room with a single bed in it and some basic medical equipment. She had seen the hospital portion of the Ironside Medical Center on the show, and this wasn't it. This was more of an interrogation chamber.
Yes.
Gomez patted the bed, waiting for her to sit gingerly on the edge of it.
It happens, more often than you might think. Those damn contacts the humans are so obsessed with.
Isabel's hands began to sweat, and she quickly tucked them beneath her thighs.
Just a few months ago, we had a beta come in with a purple eye. Not nearly as creative as yours.
Gomez prattled on as she untangled a blood pressure cuff and attached it to Isabel's arm. She picked up a small, handheld mirror from the workstation tucked into the corner of the room, shoving it beneath Isabel's nose.
Take a look. That color is really something.
Isabel only nodded as Gomez tossed the mirror aside, allowing the woman to poke and prod her, noting things down on a chart until there was a knock at the door. The camera crew came in first, trying to find the best position in the cramped room as another woman entered after them. She had soft brown eyes that bled into a black sigma ring. The first sigma Isabel had seen since...
Don't think about her.
Not now.
Not when her mother's deepest fear was coming true.
Hi, Miss Carter?
The sigma woman ignored the cameras, shifting around Gomez to stand in front of Isabel. She had a nice smile, a soft face, and straight brown hair tucked behind her ears.
My name is Annalise Teak. I'm a Bond specialist. Do you mind if I have a quick look at your eye?
Eye. Singular. Still, Isabel turned her head to the side a little, trying to hide her normal-looking iris.
Okay. It won't hurt,
Teak assured, pulling a small black torch from her pocket.
It's just a special light designed exactly for this purpose.
She flashed it quickly, dropped the beam down, and then flashed it again, her own eyes widening. When she dropped it the second time, her whole demeanor changed. She tucked the torch away and rocked back on her heels, crossing her arms as her brow dipped down.
Where is your mate, Miss Carter? They should be here.
Isabel could see Gomez's mouth dropping from her position by the door, and the cameraman's face popped out from behind the camera as he pushed his cap up, staring at her.
I don't know who they are.
Isabel frowned, shifting her fingers out from beneath her thighs to play with them in her lap.
I went hiking up the mountain behind Dorm A, and then... I think a storm hit?
But you're not hurt?
Teak flicked a look between Isabel and Gomez, asking them both the question. Isabel chewed on her lip. The, my heart sometimes stops, reason worked on Gomez just fine because she was a human. But Teak was a sigma. She would know. Isabel would have had to use her ability for her heart to stop, and she had to use her ability on a person, which implied that a person had been near her.
I don't remember anything, she said instead. But when I woke up, my mate wasn't there.
It could be a supernatural attack, something that doesn't cause any exterior wounds,
Gomez suggested in a whisper, causing Teak's mouth to immediately dip into a frown. Gomez was outright accusing someone at Ironside of being an anti-loyalist with an illegal ability. Isabel winced, rubbing at her chest again. She needed to fix this. But how?
I get sick a lot. She dared to look at Teak, but couldn't quite lift her eyes higher than Teak's arrow-shaped chin. Sometimes I have fits, and when I was younger, my heart would stop.
Teak stayed silent, but her frown deepened, tightening the skin around her chin. We need to transfer you to the hospital. The death phase is exactly what it sounds like. It's not something to be messed with.
We have to check your heart and monitor your vitals while the officials try to find the student who matches your new eye color. Is that okay with you?
I don't know anyone with this eye color,
Isabel dared to reply, slipping off the edge of the bed to follow Teak.
Maybe they don't exist. Maybe that's why they weren't there. Maybe that's why my eye looks so weird.
It's possible,
Teak admitted.
But that's all the more reason to monitor you for a few days. We need to make sure you aren't going to suffer any adverse effects emerging from the death phase without a mate.
Well, at least you're proper famous now,
Eve joked several days later, perching on the end of Isabel's hospital bed and opening up her bag to reveal a random stash of chocolate bars.
It's barely been a week and it's already out. I haven't seen it yet, but everyone's talking about it.
She handed one of the chocolate bars to Isabel, tearing open the wrapping of another and stretching out along the end of the bed. Isabel wasn't surprised. Ironside didn't air an episode on Saturday, only an announcement that they would be doing a special double episode on Sunday, so she had been dreading this all day. Even though she really didn't know who her mate was, she could still feel the pressure of lying to everyone, of pretending the Alphas had nothing to do with it, that they weren't all there when the accident happened. Still, it was necessary. Ferality wasn't just an illegal ability. It was a death sentence. If anyone found out what had really happened, it would be the end of Theodore and Moses. And the others would also likely be labeled anti-loyalists for protecting them for so long.
Any news on the mate?
Eve drew her from her thoughts. No. She nibbled on the chocolate, her stomach churning uneasily. It was like this sometimes. The stomach aches, the headaches, the low-grade fevers. Teek had said it was her body rebelling because she wasn't near her mate. But there was no mate for her to be near.
Has the bond specialist come back yet?
Eve clued into Isabel's mood immediately, straightening up and casting her eyes over Isabel's drawn face.
Not yet.
Isabel sighed, setting the chocolate aside.
She was supposed to come today, but she didn't make it. They won't let me out of here until she gives me a health plan for living without a mate. She said the officials need to approve it first.
Eve sighed, pulling her laptop out of her bag and setting it up at the end of the bed. She crawled up to the top of the bed to sit beside Isabel, and they both quietened to watch the latest episode of the Ironside show. It began with her stumbling down the hiking trail, with Ed Jones and Jack Ransom keeping relatively quiet for once. They let a crescendo of suspenseful music build in the background instead of their usual commentary. The cameras followed her to the medical center and showed some rare behind-the-scenes footage of crew reporting the possibility of a mate bond to an Ironside official standing in a room full of screens, like a vast control center for a newsroom.
"Where are they?"
the official asked, stepping away from the screens and hitting a button on his headset.
"There's just one, sir. The Sigma. No sign of a mate. She's with the triage nurse."
"The Sigma?"
He leaned over someone's desk, tapping out a few things against their keyboard as they shifted out of the way and off camera.
"We haven't seen her in days. We've been trying to track her down."
He pulled an image up on the screen closest to him, and the camera zoomed right in on it, showing Isabel and Ashford sitting on the ledge at the top of the library building.
"Is it Key and Ashford?"
the official asked.
"That's who she was last seen with."
"No, sir," the staff member replied. "Her eye doesn't match up with any of the Alphas. It was the first thing we checked."
"You're absolutely certain?"
the official asked.
"It's vastly different."
The staff member cleared her throat, lowering her voice slightly.
"If it's real."
"Get a bond specialist in there fast,"
the official ordered. The scene changed immediately, switching between a shaky vision of the hallways the camera crews were running down and the view of them from above using the fixed cameras. It showed the plaque on the door of an office in the admin building. Annalise Teek, gifted, bond specialist.
"I didn't know they had gifted on staff,"
Eve noted quietly, her usually excited tone subdued.
"Maybe she's bonded,"
Isabel suggested.
"Would make sense."
Eve lifted one of her shoulders. "It's something the humans will never fully understand.
Do you think she's stuck here like the professors, or do you think she's free?"
"It's possible her mate is dead,"
Teek was saying on screen, drawing their attention back to the episode. She was shrugging into a short blazer, a disturbed expression on her face.
"I've heard of it happening before. The anchor dying in the same accident that started the death phase.
It will be interesting to see if the tether will survive.
Carter,
one of the crew interrupted.
The tether is the Sigma. Carter.
Teek paused, and the camera zoomed right into her own Sigma ring, catching the way Teek quickly arranged her expression into a polite mask. She brushed over the front of her jacket, gave the camera a smile, and turned for the door.
If it's true.
She pulled open the door, and the cameras followed her into the hallway.
It will be interesting to see if Carter survives. But she may not be the tether. She may not be the one who entered the death phase. She may be the anchor. She might have lost her tether to their death phase. In which case, she will likely recover and go on living unchanged, except for her eye.
Eve sucked in a breath, and Isabel could feel her glancing sideways. But Isabel only folded her arms, staring at the laptop screen. Not that she was really seeing it anymore. She could barely focus as she watched herself on screen. Body language hunched, hands tucked beneath her thighs, her limbs trembling. She barely registered when Ed and Jack's silence suddenly burst in the moment Teek confirmed her eye change was real. She wanted to sink back into the pillows, close her eyes, and erase what she had heard. Killian was right. The next time she died, she would stay dead. She didn't doubt that she was the tether, that she really had almost died. But if she had lost her anchor, didn't that mean she was in free fall? Her soul attached to nothing? Nothing anchoring her in this world? To life? The door opened before the episode had even finished, and both girls looked up, scrambling to turn off the show and clean up the messy surface of the bed as Teek walked in.
Miss Carter,
she greeted warmly, her friendly smile transforming her face. It was a soft-featured face, with the exception of her arrowed chin. Her skin was dark mahogany, with a rosy tinge, and there were several gold hoops in her ears, as well as a small gold stud in her nose, all details that Isabel had been too distracted to notice last time. Teek shrugged off her jacket, pulling a chair up to the bedside.
Don't mind me.
She waved off Eve's efforts to scuttle out of the room.
I still need to check out her chart before we can chat.
Oh. Eve calmed a little, shooting Isabel a wide-eyed look.
I'll come and see you tomorrow before breakfast.
You can wait in the hallway, Teek assured her.
Miss Carter will be free to leave after our conversation.
An excited smile split over Eve's face, and Isabel felt her whole body deflate, the horrible doubt trickling out of her.
Really?
She asked as Eve finished gathering her stuff and left the room.
Really?
Teek finished with her chart and set it aside, propping her folded arms over a black folder that she rested on her thighs.
Your condition hasn't deteriorated in the least. You've gotten stronger. We believe your mate is still alive, but for some reason they weren't there when you died.
Maybe they ran away?
They aren't even at Ironside,
Teek announced, puffing out a laugh that sounded impressed.
The officials have a database for exactly this reason. Your new eye color doesn't match any student or professor here.
Professor? Isabel spluttered, drawing her legs up to her chest.
As I said, Teek's voice turned soothing, you aren't a match to anyone.
You may be the first gifted to bond to a person over distance, which would make you quite the anomaly. The officials will be conducting searches through the settlements, but for now, your focus should be on Ironside.
She straightened away from the folder, turning it and placing it onto the bed beside Isabel. This is your healthcare plan. It explains all the possible side effects that we know of when it comes to prolonging bonds and half-formed bonds, which is what you have. You will need to prolong your bond until we find your mate.
What if I don't want to find them? Isabel hugged her legs tighter, wedging her chin in between her knees as she stared at the innocuous black folder. Teek leaned back, crossing her arms loosely. She looked young all of a sudden,
a flash of sympathy racing across her expression. She didn't answer with words, but let her silence hang heavy between them. She didn't want to say it, but Isabel knew. She didn't have a choice.
"You're in a unique position," Teek finally spoke again, her tone careful. "You can't be sent back to the settlements because of your father. You're still considered a member of his household until you're 21. But you can be removed from the academy and enrolled in a research program. I guarantee you won't like it. There won't be any cameras." It seemed like a strange thing to add. There won't be any cameras. But then Isabel understood, and her heart dropped into her stomach. They would be able to do whatever they wanted with her. The humans always did whatever they wanted. Right. She forced her body to unwind and scooped up the folder, pulling it into her lap. "Can I go now?" "Just one last thing." Teek watched her carefully, pulling out her phone. "We're going to need to have regular appointments. I'm the only one here qualified to assess the health of your bond and how it might be affecting you physically and mentally." "What makes you qualified?" Isabel asked the question before she could stop herself and immediately regretted it. She didn't have to be from the settlements to know it was extremely rude to inquire about a person's bonded status, and that was essentially what she was doing. But Teek didn't seem to mind. She rolled up one of the silk sleeves of her business shirt, turning her taupe and rose dusted wrist to reveal a small black tattoo right in the center of her forearm. C.T. "My wife's initials," she explained. "We decided this was the most fitting way to complete our bond with a permanent marking instead of waiting around for an accident to happen." Isabel nodded, chewing on her lip. "How long have you been bonded?" "5 years now. She was a student here. It happened after she graduated and came back to my settlement. She will also be attending some of our sessions. It was something I fought the officials quite hard for. I thought you might appreciate the added perspective of someone who's gone through what you're going through here at Ironside. Though, I have to admit, she was nowhere near as popular as you're becoming." Teek's lips lifted into a grin. "She was a bit of a disaster, to be honest." Her fondness for her mate was obvious, and it didn't settle Isabel's mind at all. "How's Thursday?" Teek asked, tapping on her phone screen. "I can see you next week, and then the Thursday after that is the last day of term before spring break." "Sounds good." Isabel edged toward the door. It had been days since she had been alone in her own space, and she was suddenly desperate to be back in her shitty little room in Dorm O, curled up on the floor beneath a blanket. Her head wasn't right. She was depressed, and she couldn't figure out why. For almost 2 years, she had endured Ironside, refusing to let them see her break. But now she felt broken, and she couldn't identify the moment it had happened. Teek said something about sending her an email reminder of their appointment, and Isabel thanked her dutifully before walking back to the dorm with Eve, neither of them knowing what to say. "It's all going to be fine, you know," Eve attempted, cheering her up. "The scariest part of bonding is the death phase, and you're through that." Isabel grimaced, refusing to let her brain jump back, to let it roll through memories like a Rolodex, showing image after image of her parents. Of their bond. The death phase wasn't the scariest part of bonding, in her opinion. It was the happily never after. It was being tied to a person who would use her, suck her dry, and rule over her until she disappeared, without even an aftershock to prove she was ever alive, or a funeral to prove she had ever died. Ironside, as terrible as it had been, was an escape from that life, an escape from her father. The idea of going home to someone like him after she finished her 5 years at the academy, after she was no longer owned by her father, was unbearable. "Hey!" Eve gripped her shoulders, shaking her a little. "Cheer up, girl!
Whoever they are, they're in obscurity right now. Let's not waste our time worrying about obscurities. Be an opportunist. Use this.
She lowered her voice to a whisper.
Don't become their puppet. Don't just sit around waiting for them to decide what to do with you. Seriously, build up your popularity. This is your opportunity to really make it happen.
Isabel sucked in a breath, stepping into the dorm as Eve held the door open for her, patting her on the back as she moved past.
You're right.
She released the breath on a short laugh.
You usually are.
I know.
Eve grinned, shifting Isabel a sideways look.
Strategy meeting over breakfast?
Okay.
Isabel chuckled, feeling a little lighter as she climbed the stairs. Eve pulled her into a hug before they separated.
You know most of the students here would kill to be in your position right now,
she whispered into Isabel's hair.
I know.
Isabel felt a pang of gratefulness for the other girl, squeezing her tighter than usual before breaking off to go to her own room. It was that gratefulness that stopped her running right back out again. She carefully shut the door, cutting off the light from the hallway before switching on the overhead light, illuminating the dozens of heavy balloons.